This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour, presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Apple coming up with a virtual reality headset. It's a standalone item, hoping to have it into hands very soon. Dr. Anthony Fauci announcing the U.S. will remain a member of the World Health Organization, reversing a withdrawal by the Trump administration. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, reports on jobless claims and housing starts are out as President Biden issues more executive orders on his first full day in office. We're joined by Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, we have about 900,000 new claims for unemployment. What do you make of that, given what's been going on the last year?
That's up from where we were in October and November, when claims were about 700,000, 800,000 per week. So we have had more layoffs at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021. I think that's due to record high coronavirus cases, states imposing additional restrictions. But certainly the job market isn't nearly as bad as it was last spring.
And, I mean, I guess what we're looking for here over a period of months, right, is a trend where this 900,000 number continues to fall?
That's right. I mean, if you go back to early 2020, before the pandemic, they were around 200,000 per week. So we still have a lot of layoffs. And I think the job market is likely to be weak in the near term because of record high caseloads. That being said, I think we will see unemployment fall as the vaccine starts to get rolled out and people feel more comfortable going out and being in public.
So let's talk about the unemployment benefits. You have President Biden saying he wants to extend them, give people a longer opportunity to receive them. How important is that to the wider economy, given what we're experiencing?
There are tens of millions of people who are unemployed out there. They're only spending money because they are getting unemployment insurance benefits. I'm concerned that if those benefits expire, that they could be forced to cut back on their spending, and that would really weigh on the economy. So given that we're still dealing with a pandemic, I think additional aid to the unemployed will be very important in ensuring that we have a strong recovery. And then as the job market gets better, as businesses start to hire more, then perhaps we can look at scaling back those benefits.
Let's talk about housing starts. What do you make of the latest numbers from December?
Very strong. We saw a gain both in housing starts as well as housing permits, particularly on the single family side. We have record low mortgage rates. We have strong demand for housing and not much supply out there. So housing is really adding to economic growth in late 2020 and in early 2021. And I expect that that's going to remain the case throughout this year and that housing will help lead us out of the recession.
Thank you so much. That is Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services. Coming up, the U.S. is back on board with a global health organization. The U.S. will continue the battle against coronavirus as a member of the World Health Organization. The latest on this change in American policy, Michelle Cortez is joining us, a health reporter at Bloomberg News. Michelle, Dr. Fauci made this announcement. What's the significance of it?
It's critically important to the entire world, really, that the U.S. remain engaged when it comes to fighting coronavirus wherever it is. So Dr. Fauci said today that the U.S. is going to remain an active member of the World Health Organization, which President Trump had said he wanted to leave. Not only that, that we're committed to joining COVAX, which is a program that's set up to make sure that emerging markets around the world have access to vaccines. And of course, that's critical because the virus is going to be lingering in these countries that don't get a handle on it, and we're all vulnerable because it can come back with any plane load of people. So we have to handle it globally, And that's what the Biden administration is saying that they're going to try to do.
And this is always a delicate tap dance, right? Because you have a situation in which you want to be a humanitarian nation that is helping people in poor countries. And yet you have a situation where a lot of people here in the United States still have not been able to get the vaccine.
Exactly. It's just going, it's such a great point. I was just thinking about it myself. You know, if you are a young and healthy person who has young and healthy kids, you really probably in the United States don't have to have that vaccine right away, because chances are if you become infected, you'll do just fine. Whereas there are perhaps people in other countries that are in much higher risk areas, perhaps older, perhaps dealing face to face with coronavirus infections. But in the U.S., if those healthy young people and children don't get vaccinated, we can't do things like open up our schools. So how do you balance one against the other? That's above my pay grade.
Yeah. And vaccine rollout in general, what are you hearing nationwide about how it's going? I know here in Chicago, we just got word we passed the 100,000 vaccination mark. And obviously people really hoping that they can get more out the door quickly.
Well, we are still having some issues. We're hearing pretty much every day about little snafus where some vaccine has to be thrown away or it's not being used exactly as intended. But we are getting better day after day as there's more experience with these vaccines. One of the things that President Biden has pledged to do is give more transparency so that states know how much they're getting and where it's going to be going, and that they'll be tracking the vaccinations nationally as opposed to leaving each state and each county responsible for its own decisions. More significantly, the Biden administration is giving money to states and counties, so it's really going to help. I think that we're going to see a significant ramp up of vaccinations in terms of everyone's going to be going to sports stadiums, amphitheaters, community centers. There's going to be mobile vaccination centers, you know, people going around in their vans, vaccinating people at your local pharmacy. So really, we're at the very beginning, but I think it's going to get big.
Are we hearing that? I'm trying to understand the situation, because you do have some communities saying, hey, we're not getting enough vaccine. We want more vaccine. Does it just take a while for more doses to be produced? Is it literally a logistics issue where they're sitting in warehouses somewhere and just need to get to the medical professionals? How does that process work?
They're not sitting in warehouses at the federal level, right? Pretty much most of the vaccine that we have has been shipped out to states and locations. And some of them are doing things like holding back a portion of those shots so that they can make sure that they're giving the second doses appropriately. Other places, other states are still focused on getting their highest risk people, the most elderly nursing home patients and healthcare workers at first. But the bottom line is that the vast majority of Americans want this vaccine, and there's just not 300 million doses available. And not only that, we would need, you know, 600 million, and that's because they're two dose vaccines, and that is allowing for, you know, 10% of the population to take a pass on it entirely. So it is really just a matter of manufacturing in the end.
Is that why it's important to get more than one vaccine authorized? We already have more than one, but to continue getting more authorized, because it seems like any one company can't make 600 million doses in any kind of efficient way.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We do have, you know, there are a handful of vaccines now, when we include the AstraZeneca vaccine that's not approved in the U.S. Russia and China also have vaccines that are getting out there to some parts of the world. But you're exactly on point that you have to have more than one or two or even a handful of manufacturers. The challenge at this point is getting those follow-on vaccines through clinical trials, right? Now that we have Pfizer and Moderna vaccines here in the United States, we know they're 95% effective. We're going to see some challenges when it comes to getting people to participate in clinical trials, where you might be getting a vaccine that's potentially not as effective, or you could even be getting a placebo versus just waiting a little bit to get that Moderna or Pfizer vaccine. So the challenges are still pretty significant.
Thanks so much, Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News. Just ahead, shares of United Airlines head sharply lower after horrendous quarterly earnings.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of Chicago-based Boeing, Chicago-based United Airlines, rather, taking a tumble after posting a nearly $2 billion loss in the fourth quarter of last year. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Brian Langenberg, principal and industrial strategist at Langenberg & Company here in Chicago. Brian, the stock is understandably struggling today. Kind of give us the lowdown on what's going on at United Airlines.
Well, absolutely. Well, in terms of what's going on specifically at United, you know, the fourth quarter came in, I would call it slightly more hideous than anticipated. Okay, that shocks nobody. your sales were down 69%, or I should say your revenue, and your expenses were only down 42%. That's bad. Why is the stock down 5? Well, if you look at the market, it's been strong. This has been a drunken sailor market between the Fed keeping money cheap. You know stimulus is coming because politicians want to write a check to make people happy. And it shouldn't be surprising.
So going forward here, I mean, as I mentioned, this stock kind of getting hammered today. Is there no hope of a rebound in 2021? Is that maybe why investors are a little skittish?
Well, I wouldn't say there's no hope for 2021. And I would expect that as more of the vaccine gets distributed in the United States, or should say vaccines in the United States, around the world, I don't see us getting back to full-blown normal travel patterns by the end of the year, but I think we'll see directional improvement probably in the second half of this year. So I think you had a little bit of, oh, this is worse than we thought, that hit the stock today, coupled with a pretty strong stock market.
And they're having to, I guess, navigate something, obviously, pandemic, nothing like this has any airline ever dealt with, or so many other industries. But as they get ready to ramp back up, you have more interest in going back to flying, and yet not enough to continue all of your regular routes, all of your regular flights. So that slow ramp is going to be something that investors have to keep an eye on.
You're absolutely right. Because, I mean, the reality is this. You don't want to add more flights until you get enough butts in the seats you're already flying, plus at a good price. So that's the part that has to happen worst, at least reduce the cash burn. It's going to be a careful balancing act. I mean, they're all burning cash. United's cash burn actually worsened in the fourth quarter. But it's going to be gradual. They'll add back flights when they have to. But right now, it's about more people in those seats and paying higher prices. And that's not happening for a couple of quarters at the very least. I think you start to see improvement maybe about the middle of the year.
Briefly, you got a recommendation on the stock. It's 42.70 right now, down 5.5% today.
Right. So it depends upon your time frame. We don't have a formal recommendation, but what we would tell people is that, look, this is a $90 stock in the normal economy. It's at 42. So if you promised to turn your TV off for 3 years and you bought it today, you'd probably be fine. However, we've also been in a fairly extended market fueled by a lot of hope, lots of waiting on stimulus, right? And when you expect another shot, it doesn't take much for disappointment. Frankly, I think you could see low 30s before you see 90. So investors should be patient, wait for a pullback. If you see something in the low 30s, you could take a little bit of volatility, then you can step in. I don't think you need to do it today.
Thanks so much, Brian Langenberg, principal and industrial strategist at Langenberg & Company.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The Biden administration rolls out its strategy to battle the coronavirus. There's promising word on a treatment for COVID-19. Technology Thursday, the debate between safety and privacy in in-home monitoring systems. Also on the tech beat, Apple is reportedly looking to the future of virtual reality with a new headset. WBBM Business, not much movement. The Dow up 2, NASDAQ is up 63, and the S&P is up 1 point. We have oil flat today. Sunshine in Chicagoland throughout the day. Right now, 38 degrees at O'Hare, 41 downtown. The wind chill makes it feel like 28 degrees. The Biden White House has outlined its plans for fighting the pandemic, and the new president has signed 10 COVID-related executive orders today. More from CBS's Cammie McCormick.
President Biden's plans include expanding testing and vaccine availability, using the Defense Production Act to do that, and reopening a majority of schools in the next 100 days. The administration also hopes to set up vaccine centers at stadiums and mobilize federal personnel to help administer shots. Until now, that's been left up to the states.
Administration leaders acknowledge much of the plan is impossible without Congress passing the proposed nearly $2 trillion Biden COVID package. There's a promising update on a treatment for coronavirus.
This is the first major study of Eli Lilly's COVID-19 antibody drug treatment and those in nursing homes. In November, the FDA allowed emergency use of Eli Lilly's antibody drug as a treatment for mild or moderate cases of COVID-19. It's a one-time treatment. It's given through an IV. The company says among nursing home residents who got the drug, their risk was reduced by as much as 80%. Residents and staff who got the drug had up to a 57% lower risk of getting COVID-19. Nursing homes and other long-term care facilities have been hit hard by the pandemic. They account for nearly 40% of the deaths. I'm Rita Foley.
It's 12:32.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets not much above the flat line this hour. Let's see what's going on. Bill Stone is here, Chief Investment Officer at the Glenview Trust Company based in Louisville. Bill, it's good to have you on the show. What do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Yeah, as you said, the top line's flat, but there's actually a lot of action underneath the surface. So we've kind of gone back to, you know, some of what we saw in 2020 with a pretty narrow number of stocks, particularly the technology stocks like Google, Amazon, and Apple, you know, really having good days today. But yet, you know, I'll just pick on the energy stocks are the worst performing, and probably, you know, many people may not think of this, they were actually have been the best performing sector in 2021 so far. But, you know, it looks like a bit of profit taking on some of those ones that have really bounced in the relatively recent past, and then, you know, some movement back into some of those big tech names.
In general, is it better for us to see a few stocks here and there rising as opposed to the entire index, or is it better to have that whole index moving up?
I would say most people, and I would agree with this, would feel it's better to have a broader amount of participation. So, you know, some of these days like this might make people a little bit more nervous. I mean, we've had a heck of a run in general in the markets, so I don't get too concerned about one specific day, particularly in some of those areas that have, you know, I said the energy, the banks have had the same kind of thing today and recently with a little bit of profit taking because, you know, which has been interesting given that they've actually produced very good earnings.
You mentioned that you got these tech companies, they're expected to have really good earnings. From an investing standpoint, we're speaking generally here, are the tech stocks still a good buy, or are they at a price where maybe we should wait a little while? I mean, you anticipate future growth, so it's kind of difficult.
It is. I mean, so it's to me, it is a very tough one because in many cases, you know, like I'll just say Microsoft, it's priced pretty expensively in my view, but the fact is they have a great business and they're likely to continue to grow. And we've seen the strength of these businesses during the downturn, right? Or I should say during the COVID, when despite COVID, some of these companies, or I think all the ones I mentioned, probably posting record profits. So there's a value to that, obviously, relative to the disruption that happens in some other companies. But I would say it's, you know, it makes sense to at least make sure that you're diversified across and not just owning technology. I mean, technology clearly will continue to be a big part of our lives. So it's, you know, it makes sense to have certainly some exposure there.
Does that that diversity in your portfolio, does that include making sure that you have some dividend stocks too, where you're getting a little bit of cash? I mean, you're not getting any interest these days. So if you have some money that you need to just sit there, is that ever a good idea?
You must spend too much time reading my research reports and things like that, because yeah, I think that's, you know, it's really hard to get any sort of income much of anywhere except stocks, which is kind of, you know, feels like a bit of bizarro world, but there's certainly some higher quality companies, you know, say in the pharmaceutical business, those type of things where you can get a really nice dividend and income off of them, off of, you know, what I would argue is a pretty safe kind of business over the long run.
Let's talk about one particular stock, Ford. What's going on with Ford? I mean, it's up. It had been up over 8% today. It's up about 7% right now. What's going on there?
So I think, you know, I'll call it it's a bit of the Tesla and the Biden administration effect. So, you know, one is, I think people have gone back and started to look for, I'll say, secondary plays on electric vehicles. So, you know, Ford has some investments in other electric vehicle companies. And then the second part of that is the Biden administration certainly is going to try to fund more electrification of vehicles. So the thought, I think, being, you know, they may be beneficiaries of some of that money in terms of supporting the movement away from gas-powered vehicles. So I think a couple of those things are getting kind of that sector, well, it was already moving before, but kind of spreading it out to some of the other companies.
Thanks so much. Bill Stone, Chief Investment Officer at the Glenview Trust Company. Up next, Technology Thursday, monitoring vulnerable people in their homes.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour. A test run taking place in London is using tech to monitor the status of vulnerable people in their homes. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Jennifer Jolly, USA Today Tech Life columnist, founder and editor-in-chief of techish.com, based in San Francisco. Jennifer, help us to understand what's going on in London here with these sensors in homes.
Well, they're basically high-tech sensors that can know and notify either caregivers or loved ones if, say, a senior citizen takes a fall, if they fail to open the refrigerator for a certain amount of time, if they open the front door and potentially don't return. So these are high-tech monitors, really with the idea of helping people who are in public housing and among the most vulnerable.
And so what do these look like? I mean, are they lights? Are they something that gets hung on the ceiling? What does it look like in the house, have they said?
Well, they aren't talking about this specific data trial in London using the tech monitors. They're not saying whether these are cameras, whether they're sensors, but this is not new. We've had specific kinds of Bluetooth-connected sensors, Wi-Fi-connected sensors. I just wrote about Nobi, this new lamp that it looks like a gorgeous kind of high-end ceiling lamp that can detect everything with artificial intelligence from, you know, it knows the difference between a senior sitting on a couch versus falling down and not getting up. So, and that reminds me, Cisco, you know, ever since the I've fallen and I can't get up 2 decades ago kind of technology, we've been working on and trying to refine this tech. The big issues now, of course, are privacy concerns and how to do it in a way that's safe, not too intrusive, but also helps the 1 in 5 people expected to be over senior citizen age by 2030.
Yeah, privacy issue, it's always the thing that comes up because people wonder what exactly is, whatever the tech company is that's running this, what are they doing with the data that they're gathering?
Well, that is always a concern, whether it's your Amazon Alexa devices now, the ubiquitous use of cameras, voice monitoring equipment in the home environment. These are privacy concerns that can have an impact on physical and mental health the same way trying to age in place can. So that's what the tech community is really tasked with figuring it out. And a lot of this technology in the form of sensors is already being used in home facilities, senior care facilities, data gathered on user moods, behavior.
That is Jennifer Jolly. Always appreciate her being with us. Editor-in-chief of techish.com.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Second dose of Technology Thursday. Apple is reportedly working on a high-end virtual reality headset. It could debut next year. To tell us about it, Shelley Palmer, tech expert and founder of ShelleyPalmer.com. You can find him on Twitter at Shelley Palmer. Shelley, let us know, what's Apple doing here with virtual reality?
So Bloomberg is reporting that they are deep into a VR headset, which will be a technological precursor to an eventual augmented reality or AR headset or pair of glasses. This is the first time we've had anything that resembles confirmation, and we've learned a little bit about their struggles in trying to get these devices to be the right weight, put enough computational power in them, give you the optics that you need, prescription lenses, because there's not room for you to wear your glasses, those kinds of issues. And then ultimately, they will use what they learn to take this transfer from a virtual reality into augmented reality. It's all very, very exciting. They're talking maybe as early as 22, they could have virtual reality goggles that they would look like the Oculus Quest goggles or the stuff that we're used to seeing in VR with very limited augmented reality. The difference being virtual reality, you are sensory deprived and you are in a world with a closed optical environment. In augmented reality, you can see the world around you and objects are placed in front of you in either what's known as mixed reality or augmented reality. So that's the goal. Everybody knows, just a regular pair of glasses that just look like regular glasses and you have a heads-up display and it helps you navigate the world. we're still pretty far from that, according to this report, at least, and the people at Apple who've wanted to remain anonymous but have kind of confirmed that this is accurate. But Apple, the nice thing is they're getting developers involved, they're getting engineers involved, and they're working on the miniaturization and the power of the tools, the completely new architecture, computer architecture that needs to be created in order to make a battery-efficient wireless pair of eyeglasses or even goggles.
Yeah, the end game here, you mentioned they want them to look like eyeglasses. What would a consumer use this for? I mean, is this fun in games? You mentioned helping to navigate life. I mean, what are the potential uses for this?
I think we're almost at the end of handsets. Like, when this technology happens, it replaces your handset. We've got speech recognition and natural language understanding happening now, good optics, great graphics. And so if we have a heads-up display as opposed to having to hold a phone up to your head or in front of you, I think the goal here would be to replace the handset for all but the most really special things you can only do with your hands. But if you can talk it, think it, see it, do it with your eye, I think this is a brave new world. That's the end game. And I also believe, Cisco, that this is going to be a technology you won't know you really need till you see it.
Yeah, and then once you have it, there's no letting go, right? There's no going back.
Right?
Yeah, right.
iPhones, right? The glass iPhone. Who's going to use that? Everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah, by the billions. Thank you so much, Shelley Palmer. You can find Shelley on Twitter, at Shelley Palmer. Miss any part of today's Noon Business Hour? The replay podcast will be available at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.